Hey folks, welcome to episode 312 of the MLF Bass Fishing Podcast in Shaftesbury, Vermont. I'm Jody White, joined on a new computer from Norwalk, Iowa, by the one and only Kyle Wood.
Yeah, so if technology lets us down, we can blame our IT department.
Or Apple, or...
Or me, I guess.
Skype, or who knows,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's a number of things we can at least point the finger to this particular episode.
Yeah, it certainly would not be your fault. There's no way that you could have set up anything wrong.
Yeah, no possible way.
I have this pop-up that's popping up on my computer that I have to dismiss like every 20 minutes or so. And I was really worried. I did the interview with Dylan Hayes earlier, and I was really worried it was going to torpedo the whole thing.
Oh.
And it popped up, and things kept going. So,
oof-ta.
Hopefully that strategy continues for this one.
I think, I don't know. I'll keep my fingers crossed anyhow.
Anyhow, we have maybe a short show, maybe not. We'll see. I did an interview with Dylan Hayes. It's not ridiculously long. He is obviously getting ready to fish the Bass Pro Tour and the Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be good. Then, Kyle, you and I are going to talk about like field lists. We've got them out. We'll maybe talk about some rule changes and stuff like that, but there's not really a lot of stuff that we have to talk about, so there's a chance this is a little bit shorter than usual, which honestly I would like, but we'll see what happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah, our normal listeners are probably rolling their eyes right now like, oh, okay, shorter than normal.
Yeah, we've kind of been accumulating not very much news for a while, but we got to the point where kind of it'd been like a month between you and I actually recording a podcast together, so we kind of figured we had to actually do it. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, the people need our voices back.
I guess, Kyle, do you want to sell some baits? Do you think I should?
Sure.
What's your preference here?
Yeah, let me bring it to us, and then we'll listen to Dylan.
I love it.
Few lures have stood the test of time like the original Rattle Trap by Bill Lewis, and now, with the help of Major League Fishing Pro Mark Daniels Jr., we're launching the SB57 and MR6. Go to rattletrap.com to learn more. And are you in need of a great career opportunity that gives you time to fish and spend time with the family? Neat Companies is looking for you. Neat needs Class A CDL drivers now. They got competitive pay, 100% paid health insurance, a 401k, tuition reimbursement, and more are just some of the benefits. So call Neat now at 833-463-NEAT to get your career started. That's 833-463-NEAT.
I think it was beautiful. I am inspired to spend money and get a job. I think it's perfect. I will say I'm a long way from throwing a rattle trap right now. I had to take pictures of one for you.
Yep.
for a Dickie Newberry story.
Yep.
And I was like, I think they're in the boat. And I went out and they weren't in the boat. And then I was like, well, I guess I must have brought them in the house.
Put them to bed for the winter.
Dude, I have my boat storage is down to like nothing that's not like a swim bait or made out of lead. It's great.
That's
we are
perfect.
In full-time winter zone right now. I have my jerkbait box in there still, but I really think I should take it out.
Yeah, it's just taking
I haven't
up
been
space.
Throwing them. Yeah. But anyway, let's go ahead. We'll throw this over to the one and only Dylan Hayes, and then Kyle, you and I will come back and talk about fishing.
Let's get it.
Alrighty, and now we are joined by Dylan Hayes, heading into another year on the Tackle Warehouse Pro Circuit and also on the Bass Pro Tour. Dylan, you qualified this last year. Congratulations, man. You're doing big things.
Man, I appreciate that. I'm excited to go. There's a lot of changes that have happened in the last couple months, and we get to fish. I'll get to fish a whole bunch of events next year, and I'm ready to get going.
Nice. I guess let me start and talk on the Bass Pro Tour a little bit. You know, you were 18th in points this year on the pro circuit, 8th in points last year. So you really I mean, you've had your two best years as a pro these last 2 years, even though you had some real high points like prior to that. From a consistency standpoint, sure, you've hit a new level. How do you feel like you're sitting in your career right now? Because, you know, these last couple of years have been fantastic.
Well, I mean, you always want to get better and you always want to keep learning. So you don't want to be comfortable. And I really think, you know, everybody says it, but I really think I was getting lucky that time. So there's a lot of, you know, being consistent is probably the hardest part of what a professional fisherman does, in my opinion. And sometimes things aren't going your way. But I think now, compared to the first couple of years, I've just learned a lot, and I've learned that an extra fish or two, no matter what size they are, goes a long way in AOL standings at the end of the year versus earlier in my career, you know, I may not have made that decision. And so I try to, you know, always at least bring a limit in, you know. And, you know, and I've had tournaments, and you know, one of my worst career finishes was on a Kissimmee chain. I caught a limit both days and still finished, like, way down there, 100 and something. And so it doesn't always matter. But on the long scheme of things, like, it's just being able to adjust and just put some fish in the boat, and even when it is hard, and having the mentality of knowing that if it's hard on you, it's probably hard on most of the field as well, to just keep going. And every once in a while you have an event where, you know, you really figure it out and you really stand out, but that doesn't always happen. Just avoiding the bombs is what's the hardest part, really.
Last year, you had kind of a – well, you had – I mean, anything in the triple digits is a bomb, I would say.
Sure.
You had a pretty rough go at the Lake Erie Super Tournament. You caught apparently one fish for 15 ounces on day one, which seems like a real achievement.
No, that was – I'll tell you all about that. So going into that event, I think I was second or third in the points. And I knew I had to I could zero and still make the championship. All right.
Okay.
So I knew I could gamble a little bit to try to win. Well, I had spent a day two days of practice.
It might have been four for that one. Remember we like messed around with the rules for that event?
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, I spent part of my practice in Lake Erie and part of my practice in St. Clair.
Yeah. Which you've done well there before.
Which I've had, you know, I had some history. I was confident there. And I just felt like I had a lot better shot at St. Clair. Well, I had found one spot on Erie. I don't have a clue what it was. It was some sort of structure in the water. I don't know if it was an old shipwreck or boulder. I couldn't ever tell what it was. But I saw a school of fish on there in practice. Complete luck that I even idled over it and I saw it. And I was like, that looks like fish. So I threw over there and I caught a 5-pounder. That was at the kind of around the mouth or the western end of Lake Erie. Well, I knew there was more there. So I knew that was a really, really good spot. Plus, I had my stuff at St. Clair. Well, the first day of the tournament, I was going to St. Clair. Man, it was so rough. I had a very short day. I had a 3 o'clock weigh-in, and it was so rough. It took so long to get across that lake. And right when I got around the mouth, I was like, all right, Dylan, be smart. Don't be stupid. Like, just go catch some fish and advance, get to the next day. You have a long day tomorrow. Well, so I stopped on my spot in Lake Erie, and they were gone. Nothing. Wasn't nothing there. So I was like, I can either go off in one of these creeks and try to catch, you know, 10 or 12 pounds of largemouth, or I can go spend 2 hours on Lake Erie. And I mean, on Lake St. Clair. So I knew I could gamble. So I didn't want to settle with 10 or 12 pounds of largemouth to get behind. So I knew if I got four bites, Well, really, if I got three bites, they were going to weigh 10 or 12 pounds on St. Clair. So I went. And by the time I got up there, man, I had like an hour and 20 minutes of fishing time. And I fished for, I don't even remember what I caught. I caught one or two right off the bat. And then went a long time without catching one. And I had a spot I thought I could catch a limit on no matter what. And I went to that, and my roommate was sitting on it. We were sharing it. We both found it. And I was like, crap, this ain't – like, he didn't call him. And it just wasn't working. Well, I went to one last spot. I mean, I literally had, like, 5 or 10 minutes of fishing, and I pulled off a four-pounder on that spot. And my day was up. I had to go. I mean, I only had time to hit, like, three spots, and I caught one or two fish. And when I got back, I ended up being late. Like a minute or two late. I don't even remember how much it was.
Wasn't there a big storm in that afternoon, or was that day two?
That was day two. Okay. I'm getting there. Well, so it was really hard to judge time when you're driving 110 miles one way. Yeah. And you got, you know, big waves and stuff. And I just misjudged it by like a minute or two, and I was late. That's why I had 15 ounces. I don't even remember what I had. I think I had two fish, but I might have just had one. And I bombed it. I was mad at myself. But, I mean, that was a choice I made because I knew I was walking the championship. Well, day two, I had no choice. I had a long day. I had like a 4:30 weigh-in, and I had no choice but to go try to catch a big bag. And so I drove up there, back to St. Clair. It was flat, calm. I got up there real fast, and I had like 4 hours of fish. And I caught like 19-something pounds. And I caught them on the very last spot where I lost the four-pounder the day before. I had just picked the wrong place to fish. I only had like an hour and 20 minutes to fish the first day. I picked the wrong place. I started somewhere different, and I caught them real fast. And they weighed like 19 and change. Well, I was like, Dylan, don't be late. So I left for like plenty of time early, and I get back to Erie, and I get to the mouth of Erie. I look across Erie, and it's flat as can be. I said, Dylan, you got like 30 minutes left to fish. So I went to my little spot my little piece of structure. I went over there just to see if they were there again, and they weren't. Well, I still left with like what I thought was like 15 minutes early. So I'm rolling across Lake Erie, I mean, 60-something miles an hour, and I got about 20 miles from the ramp, and the wind starts blowing. And there's, like, I can only go, like, 25, 30 miles an hour. You know, but this is not good. This ain't good. And I push it, and I end up being late that day again, too, by a minute or two. I think 1 minute that day. That's why I weighed in 18 instead of 19. And so... it was just a disaster. I mean, it was a disaster, but it was some bad luck, I guess. I don't really know other way to call it. I picked the wrong spot the first day and didn't have much time. And second day, I picked the right spot and was still late. So I wish I had that one to do again. But, I mean, it is what it is. You're going to have bad events every once in a while. But, again, I mean, had I not been in that position to gamble, I probably would have never went to St. Clair to begin with.
Yeah, like you could have stuck around and caught largemouth. You could have, you know, kicked around the islands, and you never would have been late, but you also might never have caught an 18-pound, 19-pound bag, you know.
Sure, but there was a lot of checks on largemouth, and there was a lot of, you know, top.
I mean, Justin Lucas won out by the islands, you know.
Sure, I mean, there were several people that, you know, were doing well, and they caught them right there close to the, you know, within 20 minutes of the ramp. And I mean, here's what it is. I mean, it's a poor decision but I mean, had I caught 19 pounds the first day, you know, I'd have been way up there. And I knew I was a random. But even having the limit spot that I ended up getting, I mean, having the two spots where I thought, like my little piece of structure and then the other little limit spot, I thought that was going to save me even if I had a rough time. Well, neither one of them saved me, but I don't think 5 years ago I would have thought like that and would have planned that well. But to me, it was still a solid plan. It just didn't work.
I guess it boils down to that decision-making thing where sometimes you do everything right and it doesn't work. And then, you know, it's one of those things that leaves you wondering a little.
Yeah. I mean, and that day, I just had such a short day, and it was so hard to get across the lake, and that's where I was going no matter what was going to happen. And I thought my first spot was like a 20-pound spot for sure. And every one of them left, like a smallmouth for you. They left, and it was very frustrating. And I just thought I had some good areas on St. Clair, and I thought I just had a solid opportunity to get them there with two backup spots, one of them being a really good spot, and it just none of it worked. I didn't have very much time to adjust, so that's just the chance you make a really long run like that.
As far as this year goes, and sort of knowing that the Bass Pro Tour qualification was like kind of on the horizon, how much were you striving for that? How much were you worried about, you know, really doing well in points this year? Or was it something that just kind of happened and you were going to take advantage of it? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I mean, it was definitely on my mind. I knew I had to finish 12th or better to be locked in the top 10 in points over 2-year average. So it was definitely, you know, on my mind all year long. And I hung around that. You know, I guess I finished 18th. Now, I don't know if I dropped or came up a couple of spots in the last one. But to answer your question, yes, it was on my mind. And I definitely thought about it and tried to be consistent as I could. It worked out, I guess, but it almost didn't. I mean, I was the last person to get in.
Yeah, you were the last man in. Did you ever have an event where, like, you did something different because you were like, hey, I really got to fish for points in this one? Or do you feel like the whole season you fished it kind of like you would have regardless?
No, I fished it. I didn't change anything. I fished pretty much exactly the same, honestly. The one that scared me was ended up being about my worst finish, was the very last event at St. Lawrence. And it's scary because anytime you run an hour or farther, I mean, you're just taking a lot of time away from you. And it just, that was probably the most difficult one for me. Plus I was under the weather that entire tournament. I don't think I was thinking clearly like I would have if I had been 100% healthy in it. I think that showed in my finish, really. But I mean, in the end, it was enough to get me in, and that's really all that matters.
That is a good point. How do you feel about fishing for, you know, a lot more than five fish next year? Because you fished the title on Sturgeon Bay, and that was, you know, obviously a multiple fish kind of tournament. Have you messed around with any other formats like that?
Nope, that's the only time. And I really enjoyed that event. The first day I fished that format, I led a lot of that day in my group. I didn't win the day, but I sat in the lead or right close to the lead nearly all day. And then the second, or the, I guess it would be the third day I fished, I was on the bubble the entire day. And it does bring a lot more. You're in the moment a lot more knowing where you're actually sitting during the day. I'm excited to be able to use it as a tool more than anything. I know if I'm not getting bites, nobody else is getting bites, like, I'm okay. But if I'm not getting bites and the whole field's kicking my butt, like, I need to change. And so I think I'll be able to use it as a tool. As far as catching numbers, I'm as confident as anybody at this point. I don't always catch numbers, but you don't always have to either. And sometimes I do. I mean, it's just, I'm comfortable being anywhere at any time under any format, honestly. And that's another reason why I chose next year I'm fishing both tours, you know, Bass Pro Tour and the Pro Circuit, in case I don't excel at multiple fish tournament, I still have a five fish format to fall back on.
I mean, you've won a Toyota Series event. You've made top tens in the Pro Circuit, the FLW Tour. Like, you're good at catching. You're good at five fish tournaments. Like, that's a fact, you know?
I mean, sometimes.
Some on your good days. For the Bass Pro Tour, is there a tournament next year that you've kind of circled? Like, this is one that either you have experience on, maybe it's Lake of the Ozarks, you know, or just one that you're like really excited or interested in? Because I feel like it's not, you know, it's a schedule that is not one that you've really necessarily fished before. Whereas
no.
The Pro Circuit hits some of the same lakes, you know what I mean?
Sure. I'm excited. To me, that's what I tell people every year. I don't care what lake we go to. I don't care what time of year we go to. It doesn't matter. None of that matters. Somebody's going to win every single time. Like, you, to be a professional angler, you have to be able to do everything at any time. I'm just as comfortable drop shotting in 30 foot of water as I am flipping a mat. None of that matters. So to pick one lake, no, it doesn't matter. I'm excited about them all. But I will say this. I am excited about the first stop in Monroe, Louisiana, because I grew up right there. I mean, my grandma lives in West Monroe. I'll get to stay at her house every single night. I mean, I grew up about 50 minutes from Monroe. I have fished Caney a handful of times in recent years, just the last couple of years, always in the summertime, never in the spring. And I fished like Darbone once. I've never been on the other one. It's just open, I think. But I am kind of frustrated. I mean, literally 30 minutes from Darbone my entire life growing up, and I've been on it one time. I'm kind of regretting that at the moment. At least I wish I knew how to get around. But I'm excited to be close to my family. I mean, I should have some family and friends that should be able to come watch. And, you know, and staying at Mamaw's house, you can't beat that. And she'll get to come watch. She's never been to a tournament. And I told her, I was like, look, if you can't come to this one, I mean, something wrong. You ought to be able to drive 5 miles to the ramp.
Yeah, that'll be really cool. Like, you don't even – nobody gets to fish tournaments that close to home, you know, realistically.
No,
like, 5 minutes is – that's incredible.
Yeah, so I'm super, super excited about that, even though I don't really have a whole lot of experience on the lakes. But just being home, you know, I'll be comfortable.
All right. How about the landing fish thing? I've seen some real trials and tribulations with you and smallmouth and nets. You're not going to have a net half the year. What's going to go down? Do you have this handled? What's your vibe?
Yeah, I'm not worried about it. I think it's funny. I think if you can commit to one or the other, it's better than being indecisive. Do I flip it? Do I not flip it? Do I try to lip it? Do I get the net? Well, now it's like just taking one more option out of that book. Like, I don't know, the net's not there, so now I know I have to take my time, and I'm fine. I mean, when I'm fishing, when I'm guiding and stuff, I practice grabbing them a lot, just for that reason, matter of fact. And so, no, I'm comfortable grabbing them. Yes, it is harder, especially smallmouth. I agree. And I'm sure I'll lose my share, but everybody's doing the same thing. So you just got to be smart about it. And I'm ready for it. It's okay. I'm not worried about that part of it.
Okay. Well, I am certainly – I'm looking forward to it either way, because I feel like – It felt like you kind of burst onto the scene at Lake Travis a few years ago. And it was like, who's this Dylan Hayes guy? He's catching a fish like every cast. Because if I remember correctly, like, you were smashing them in that tournament.
I was.
And then you had an awesome event at St. Clair. And then for a while, like, you were fishing like everything. You know, you were fishing the Northern Division. Like, there was just, everywhere I looked, it was Dylan Hayes. It was like almost Dakota Hebert level. Or at least it felt like that. And now you're like going back to a huge schedule again. So, like, that'll be cool for you.
Yeah. I've always said I want to fish more big events, and now, like if I just fish the pro circuit, I just get 6 chances at 100 grand. Well, now I get, somewhere around 15. So you can't, as a pro level fisherman, that's what you're trying to do. If you're trying to, win, you're trying to make money, and it's more exposure for me and my sponsors. And, so I'm really excited about fishing more events. I have fished 15 events before back in those years you're talking about. And it is busy. But I have a pretty good support system, and I think I have all my bases covered as far as back home goes. And I it's a lot of events, but even when you're fishing like Northern Toyotas, you go really into the fall and stuff, and we won't go into the fall very much here, so I'll still get a lot of free time in the second half of the year.
Do you think you'll still like guide and stuff like that around home, or do you sure, is it kind of your goal to transition out of that?
No, I'm still going to guide. I do a lot of trips when my girls are in school. This little 4-hour trips or 6-hour trips, drop them off, go fishing for 4 or 6 hours, and go pick them up. It gives me something to do during the day. It keeps me sharp. I've thought about this, and you mentioned in my last 2 years have probably been my best 2 years consistency-wise. And I definitely agree. It's also the 2 years I've been guiding, too. And I think that's a lot to do with it, man. Just more on the water more. Guiding is way harder than tournament fishing, because you figure out how to catch them doesn't mean that little 10-year-old kid can skip a jig or get the boat dock, or flip a bush or punch a mat. Like, they can't do that. So, or 80-year-old man, like, guiding, you have to find easy fish to catch for everybody, all ages, and all skill levels. So I think that has taught me how to get a bite, and even when it's hard, it doesn't matter. These people pay you. They expect to catch.
Yeah, they want to catch fish.
Some fish. And whether or not it be an epic day or just a handful of fish or whatever it is, it's still a big challenge to get everybody fishing. Now, and another thing, if I take 10 people fishing, around where I live, it's really touristy, so it's just a lot of it's not local people who fish all the time. It's just a lot of tourists. And if I take 10 people fishing, man, 8 of them never thrown a bait caster, and I'll say 5 of them never even caught a fish before. Or hadn't been fishing in 10 years or something like that. So they're not. It's not a very high skill level. And when you do get a trip where people can actually fish a little bit, those are the really fun ones, because you can just relax and go do stuff that you would normally do. But no, I definitely still plan on guiding all I can. It's just extra money and extra knowledge, and I like building relationships with people. I like the public and meeting people, and it's good for sponsors. It's just that much more exposure locally, and it gets, people's my rods and reels in their hands, and they see my graph, and they see how my boat handles and my motor, so it's good for everybody. So I'll definitely still do that.
Okay. Do you ever mess around with live bait when you're guiding? Cause I know, talking with Brent Crow, after the Pickwick Championship, he's all about live bait, and John Cox loves shiner fishing. Have you done that at all?
Or never.
You're like, that's where you draw your line for finding easy fish.
Well, because it doesn't help me. I want to be a better tournament angler. And if I'm fishing with shiners or crawdads or something, it doesn't really help me a lot. It may show me where fish are, but I need to find fish and learn how to kick and trick them, and give them a bite.
Fair enough. Makes sense to me. Let's see. I guess my last question, because I know you've got stuff to do, I got some stuff to do. What are some of your goals for next year? Because you're embarking, there's not a Rookie of the Year award that I'm aware of on the Bass Pro Tour. But, you know, you've got a new thing going there, and you've got another year on the pro circuit. You know, you've got a lot in front of you.
I want to win. I haven't won the Toyota is the highest level that I've won. I've been close three times. I have three top threes on the pro circuit. Two of those I should have won. You mentioned Lake Travis. Like, I was always a couple pounds back of Lake Travis, and I never lost one. But looking back, I wish I had the knowledge that I have now. I mean, that was my second event in my career. Man, I didn't know anything. I really didn't. But I want to win. I mean, I want to be consistent. I want to show myself and everyone else that I can hang with all the people that been doing it my entire life. You know, I'm fixing to be fishing against a lot of people that I've studied growing up. I mean, I've been obsessed with it my whole life, and, you know, reading magazines and, you know, Van Damme, for example. I mean, who hasn't studied what he does? And I just want to prove that I can hang, you know, cash and checks, and I want to win.
I like it. That seems like a pretty good goal, is to hang and win. And, man, you've been hanging, and you've been really, really close, like, more than a few times. So,
I know.
It'll happen, I would think.
One of those, the Lake Cherokee tournament, you talk about the whole net deal. I lost a 5-pounder on day 3.
Oh, God, those were like gold day in that tournament.
And I weighed 2 5-pounders that day. And I weighed in 2 5-pounders and 3 2-pounders. And it was raining, and I had my hood up, and I fought this fish all the way to one side of the boat, and I almost flipped it. And I was like, no, Dylan, don't be stupid. So this is my experience coming out. So I just slowed down, I turned it around, I worked the fish all the way around the trolling motor, around the front of the boat, and came back to the other side. And, you know, had I been watching that fish, I could have grabbed it right then, or could have flipped it in the boat. I mean, you don't like to flip 5-pounders, or I don't. So I was like, let's reach for the net. Well, I turned the reach for the net. That's another thing I learned. Like, I keep the net way more ready than I ever have because of this reason. But I reach for the net, and when I turn the reach for the net, I even look at the net, the fish jumps one more time. I thought it was done. I mean, I've been falling all around the boat. And when it jumped, I had my rod down, and I was looking at the net instead of looking at the fish, and it got a lot of slack, and it came off. You know, I lost that tournament by like a pound or two. And that was winning fish. So that one really, really hurts. The St. Clair tournament that year, I can't even tell you how many freaking big ones. I lost like 5 6-pounders that week, and that's the truth. But it was always a fluke deal. You had to throw a long ways. Like, every big one that bit was on the very, very end of my cast. And it was just, I don't know if their mouths were harder or what. I never lost one under 5 pounds the whole week. Just a great big one. So I lost a 7-pounder that day. It won the day. So the day I weighed 26 pounds, I lost a 7-pounder. For sure. One that was without a doubt. But it was nothing, there's nothing I can just point my finger on and say, this is what happened. So I don't really feel super bad about it. I know I could have, you know, made an adjustment on that one at Cherokee and won. I had lots of opportunities at St. Clair to win, but I don't know. Regardless, I mean, this is when I won at Lake of the Ozarks, I could do no wrong. And that's what you always hear about it. And when it's your time, it's your time. And I really believe that. Like, I didn't lose a fish that whole week. I caught a 5-pounder on my last cast. I mean, I just feel like this is how it is. I mean, you just put your position. You got to put yourself in position to be like that. But if I'm meant to win, I'll win.
I like it. Well, before I let you go, man, where can folks find more Dylan Hayes if they want to book a guide trip, they want to follow you on social? Like, you're pretty good at that kind of stuff. What's the rundown? It's your time.
Sure. I have on Instagram, it's Dylan Hayes Fishing. I also have a fishing Facebook page, it's Dylan Hayes Fishing. You can follow me both of those. If you're interested in guiding, I have a website. It's DillonHaysFishing.com. Pretty simple to remember all three of those. And you can book off the contact page or off the guide page. And you can probably find my phone number all over the place. So I'm pretty easy to get a hold of.
All right. So, folks, sign Dylan up for some spam text messages.
Yeah. And, that's why I didn't just throw it out there over the podcast.
All right. Well, Dylan, it's been good talking with you. And I have high hopes for you next year. I want big things. I think it would be awesome if we get to film a day five. If you want to win on the Bass Pro Tour, that's fine too. But I would like to be there, you know, but whatever works out, works out. And I wish you the best, man.
Thank you, Jody. Appreciate that.
All righty. So, Kyle, I guess we're back, and we're going to focus on some field lists for starters. There's the Pro Circuit field list and the Bass Pro Tour field list. Both of them came out. Do you have a preference for where we start? Do you want to kind of pick one and kick it off?
Yeah, I guess maybe go Bass Pro Tour because that came out first. And
it's kind of simpler to do, I feel like.
Yeah. So, basically, it's 80 guys this year, or for 2022, I guess. Really, kind of your only adjustments are your additions to the BPT from guys qualifying out of the pro circuit, right? So, Dakota Bear, Cole Floyd, Dylan Hayes, Clabian Johns, Jeremy Lawyer, and Ryan Salzman fit the bill there. And I feel like there's another piece of info from a field standpoint.
I think the other thing would be that John Cox isn't fishing him.
Oh, yes. Yes,
which
yes,
which is not... I mean, here's the thing. For podcast listeners, that's not news.
No, it is not.
So shout out to you. But, like, it's also not entirely surprising because John is kind of a special case in so many aspects of life.
Yes.
The other thing that is probably worth, like, some mention is that Ron Nelson is not fishing it. He had an invite, decided against it.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that I'm, like, necessarily the Ron Nelson whisperer or anything like that, but I talked to him about it for, like, 30 minutes the other day, and essentially, like, he knew what he was getting into with, you know, the pro circuit, and he didn't really think he was going to fish two things, so he fished the pro circuit.
Oh, that's fair.
For him, like, he doesn't really miss checks, right? And one of the big benefits of fishing the Bass Pro Tour is everyone gets paid, I think. Or at least the entry fee, like...
Yeah.
I think everyone gets paid. Whereas for the pro circuit, you cannot get paid. But I mean, you know, he always gets paid, so maybe the difference isn't there. And certainly now that there's 4 days alive and all that, like, I don't know, not that Nelson is a guy who cares about, you know, live numbers or anything like that, because I don't think
yeah,
he does.
He is
but,
not.
You know, he's... He knows what he's in for at the pro circuit. And you know what? Like, he's going to be an Angler of the Year favorite, as he is pretty much every year. So that's good for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could actually be a really good schedule for him next year.
Oh, we could do a whole podcast just on Ron Nelson predictions. But
yeah. Well, so while we're on the subject, I am so excited for John Cox to fish a full season of literally anything. Because, like, I really want John Cox to win AOI, and I think that he needed to fish fewer tournaments to do it. I think next year, like, I want to make, when we do a prediction story, I would like to predict that John Cox will win AOI. I realize it's not, like, an extraordinarily, it's not going out on a limb, but...
But you got some good stuff, man, you can write to justify it.
Yeah, it would be. It would just be awesome to see him pull it off, too.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. He'd definitely need to, like, lay off the gas just a little bit. And it'll be kind of fun to see what happens now.
Yeah. But anyway, that's, I guess, the main stretch of news. from the Bass Pro Tour.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise, of the guys, same cast of characters or the other 74 are, you know, guys you've watched before. So,
yeah. One other note is that of the guys who are moving up to the Bass Pro Tour or sideways to the Bass Pro Tour, however we want to put it, the Lawyer and Salzman are the only guys not fishing both. So,
yes.
Hebert, Floyd, Hayes, Klabian, they are all going to keep doing the pro circuit as well. Which will be a lot of tournaments for some of those guys, but I mean, it's nothing for the Cody Bear.
Yeah.
But Lawyer and Salzman, we will not see a lot of next year, which is tremendously sad.
It really is.
I don't know. I mean, both of them are iconic from an in-boat food standpoint. Lawyer and his peanut butter jellies, Salzman and the oatmeal. You know, Lawyer obviously is just one of the great storytellers and one of the great voices in pro fishing.
Yes,
it's a real loss for the pro circuit for both of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Losing a lot of memes and a lot of like squirrel and rough fish killing and catching ability.
Yeah, like random outdoorsy things from Jeremy Lawyer.
Yeah, but I guess, you know, life happens. People move on.
I mean, they're still family, and I'm sure we'll both still talk to them.
Yeah,
but we'll have to check in on them like halfway through the season. Have them on the podcast, see what's up.
I mean, look, we're gonna have tournaments in the Ozarks next year, so we're gonna call Jeremy Lawyer up for previews. It's just gonna happen.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. We got like a really good crop of dudes we can call about Gunnersville. A bunch of them on the pro circuit already, so it's a little harder for Salzman to like get snuck in there. Mm-hmm. But I think we can manage it. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah, I think so.
We probably have a lot of BFLs we need to write previews for anyway. So
probably,
you know, I'm a little worried about that. I'm already dreading writing BFL previews, but we got a bunch of Toyota Series events with a bunch of dudes signed up already, though. So that's good.
Nice.
Anyway, on to the pro circuit, I guess.
Pro circuit.
So the pro circuit, we can't really read everyone. And honestly, I don't even know if we should read all of the newcomers. What do you think?
Well, I think, yeah, maybe we just give them, maybe we start with like next year. It's 157 guys. And the format for the pro circuit in general is changing some.
Yeah, quite significantly, some would say.
Yeah, you mentioned already the 4 days of live now, which is dope.
Huge fan.
However, it's regular old, you know, pro circuit, five fish, days one and two, full field. We cut to the top 50 on day three, based on cumulative weight. Then the top 10 from day three will advance to day four, where the weights will be zeroed, and then, you know, best bag of the day wins.
Which is certainly a decision.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, I don't know. I know how some guys felt about it. Some guys seem fine with it. But it's kind of an interesting change. I suppose it was, you know, you and I kind of ran down, like, last year, how many times did the leader going into the final day, like, actually win? And it really wasn't.
Or, like, not even that, but, like, would it have changed the results?
Right. That's a better way to word what our conversation was. And it didn't really seem like, I don't know, that it would have, right? Because, like,
so, Okeechobee would not have. Skeet blew that out.
Yep.
Spencer Shuffield would have won at Lewis Smith. Instead of John Cox.
Oh, yeah.
Spencer finished second. Now, you could argue that maybe if Spencer hadn't sucked so much the first 2 days, he should have won anyway. So, I'm just saying.
And, that's fair.
Lake Murray Gagliardi would have beat Becker.
Yep.
At Eufaula, Abram still would have.
I think he still
would have. No, actually, Abram wouldn't have won. Mitch Crane would have won. Mitch Crane finished sixth. He had 5 ounces. He had 14.6. Abram had 14.1.
I forgot about the Mitch Crane rally.
Let's see. Potomac River, Jacopo won and would have continued to win.
Would have handily won.
Extremely convincing fashion. and then at the St. Lawrence, Cody Pike won and would have still won.
Yeah.
And then the title, obviously, I guess the same thing would happen because that's what the rules were.
Yep.
So there would have been some differences. I guess it would be hard for me to argue that the new winners, if it was based on who had the best turn, like the new winners based on a zero top 10 day, were like more deserving of winning than the guys who actually won the tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
I think I could see the argument really strongly for Shuffield because I think he put it together really well and he was like crushing them compared to John. Like John had done a lot of damage, but was kind of running out of things. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But like, you know, if you look at Abram on whatchamacallit, Eufaula. Like, I mean, one, that was a really stupid tournament. But two, he kind of was like pretty much the best all week. Like, he had a degree of consistency that nobody else really had.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to think. Murray, I mean, I guess anytime Anthony Gagliardi wins on Murray, it's not like it's some kind of shock. But I mean, man, you know. Matt Becker did have a really good tournament.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess it is what it is.
Yeah, I know, like, from a live standpoint, too, knowing that anyone in the top 10 can win is a little more interesting to watch, right? Because you may not be as invested in 10th place guy going into the final day of, you know, regular cumulative weight style tournament, but and a lot of times things get so hard, or you know, the fishing gets so tough after those guys beat it up for that many days in a row, that you do usually kind of see a bigger bag, maybe not win, but definitely propel you up the leaderboard a pretty good way. So I feel like the base of that is already kind of there, but it's definitely an interesting switch for next year. And the 4 days alive though, I'm all about it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to 4 days alive because there are so many. I mean, everyone who follows tournaments knows this, but like, there's so many really excellent things that happen on day one. And granted, they don't necessarily get covered on day one on live, but certainly on day two, you know, there's like a lot of times the best fishing of the tournament is the first 3 days.
Yes.
You know.
Yep.
Remember, so like the last day at Champlain, like that's the exception to the rule. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
The last day at Kentucky Lake, back in the heyday, that's not the norm.
Yep. Yep.
So I love earlier live. That's going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Should we move to, like you said, we're not going to read all 157 guys. You can go to majorleaguefishing.com. Look at the roster if you have not already. Probably some things to point out are the addition of some, there's like some new Bass Pro Tour faces on the roster this year. Like, I'm thinking, Randall Tharp comes to mind.
Yeah.
Who else comes to mind?
I don't know if there are any other new ones.
I think a lot of the...
Yeah,
a lot of the BPT guys that fished last year are again.
Is it the same guys or they left?
What about Randy Howell?
Yeah, I guess he's new.
Yeah, I think other than that though, we're kind of It's kind of it.
I am very excited to see Tharp back.
Yes.
Because, you know, I don't know if there is a guy alive who is more ill-suited to the Bass Pro Tour competition and is more of a threat in five fish competition. It seems mm-hmm. anyhow, because I feel yeah. like I don't know the last time he's had an exciting moment on the Bass Pro Tour. And he used to, on the Elite Series and, you know, especially back in Florida on the FLW Tour, like, he was always a factor.
So yes. Yes.
I'm very much looking forward to seeing if Tharp can, like, become, you know, Tharp again.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely pumped for that and getting to hang out with him a little more. Because back in the heyday, we were, you know, it was good times. Good times. Probably have him on the podcast, maybe. But I digress. The other thing I want to point out with regards to this list, and then I'll let you throw in whatever you want. Michael Matisse back.
I know. That's fun, right?
Yeah, that's super fun.
We probably should have him on the show because we need to, obviously, I think he couldn't even get into the country last year to fish.
Yeah.
So whatever his, you know, qualification was, like, it was obviously like a hardship exemption or something like that, you know, which makes total sense that he would be back.
Yep.
But I mean, this kind of goes forgotten, but the dude tied Jeremy Lawyer for the win at Grand Lake. I mean, if he had caught 1 ounce more or whatever the weird tiebreaker was, like, if we had current tiebreaker rules and it was you go back out for a 1 hour fish off, like, he might have won an FLW Tour event.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool seeing him back. He's obviously a huge asset from an accent standpoint as well.
Obviously. We lose Lawyer, we gain Matisse.
Honestly, it's not the trade I would make, but it is it's not the worst. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We could do worse.
Yep.
There's actually, from an international standpoint, next year is going to be pretty interesting on the pro circuit. Because obviously you've got Matisse, you've got Jacopo, and then we also have one of the more interesting rookies, to be honest, Ricardo Gonzalez coming to fish.
Oh yeah.
Who, like, Ricardo is, as far as I can tell, essentially like the Mexican KVD. And I think that that's probably not exactly the right comp, but like, he is crushed in Mexico. And he qualified by being the highest finisher in the international division at the Toyota Series Championship in 2020. So at Cumberland.
Yes.
He finished like 120th or something. The international division did not show up. So next year, Barry Graves qualified for the pro circuit for next year. Essentially, when you qualify out of the international division, you do it from the Toyota Series Championship, and then it's delayed, so like you can get your act together,
yep.
theoretically.
Yep.
Anyway, like, Ricardo could be pretty dang interesting. He hasn't fished, like, he hasn't done super amazingly in the U.S., but he has done super amazingly in Mexico, as far as I can tell. And I'm really looking forward to watching him fish, especially with more practice maybe and being a little more consistent and like having a full year at it, as opposed to just rolling in for a Toyota Series Championship somewhere he's never been.
Yes.
So, and I mean, the first one is in Texas. He's fished Bass Champs events, mostly like on Falcon and Amistad and stuff, but you know, who knows?
Yeah, it'd be cool. There's 23 rookies. I don't know if we mentioned that, but speaking, you know, of Ricardo, there'll be 22 other guys, I guess, joining him, rookie-wise. And I guess probably one of the most impressive names that I saw on there is none other than Keith Carson.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah.
Do you want to know? So I'm working on the rookie rundown, right? Which is a thing that
yep.
I enjoy doing. My final sentence for Keith Carson: if you're setting odds for ROI, Carson has got to be up there.
Yeah.
I'm so hyped for more Keith
yes.
Carson.
Yeah,
granted, he didn't qualify.
It's like having two John Coxes.
It is, except one of them is like, I don't know, looks super cool. And the other one looks like John Cox, which is also super cool. But like, I mean, Keith Carson's amazing. I'm hyped for the Keith Carson experience.
Yeah, yeah.
Other, like, as far as the rest of the rookie field goes, do you think I should just read it all? It is not that long.
Yeah, you might as well.
All right. So I'm going to go alphabetically here. I'll recover some ground. But Steven Albertson, he's from Florida. Mickey Beck is from Tennessee. Jeff Bridges is from Texas. Keith Carson. Philip Dutra from California, lives in Alabama now. Ricardo Gonzalez from Mexico. Christian Greco is from Florida. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Blake Hall from Alabama. Guides on Gunnersville. Cole Harris from Raleigh. Used to live in Vermont. Nick Hatfield, Greenville, Tennessee. Cole Hewitt is from Florida. River Lee is from Texas. Robbie LaFear is from Michigan. Andrew Loberg is from California. Steve Lopez is from Wisconsin. Kyle, do you know how to say that name? That town name?
Hold on. I don't have... I was looking at the guys. Oh, Oconomowoc.
Oconomowoc?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cameron Madison is from Louisiana. Jeff McClain is from Mississippi. Andy Newcomb. Andy the Beautiful Newcomb is from Missouri. Lance Oleg Schlager from Tennessee. Bruce Parsons from Missouri. Martin Villa from Virginia. And then Mitchell Webb from Oklahoma is the rundown. And there's, honestly, this year, I don't know that there's like a can't-miss rookie like we've had with Cole Floyd and Ron Nelson. And I'm trying to pick like really high-flying guys to poo-poo this incoming rookie class. But there's a lot of like high-quality rookies. You know, guys who had really good years in the Toyota Series. Some guys who've been fishing for a long time. Some guys who, you know, had a great year and are going to kind of stub their toes. Or maybe not won't stub their toes, but are going to have some opportunities to do so as they, you know, branch out. Mm-hmm. But, like, I would say overall it's a pretty strong rookie class.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely a good crop of guys that, yeah, have, you know, done stuff in the Toyota Series and kind of... I don't know, like, is been on our radar a good way to word it for a lot of those guys, for a lot of these rookies anyhow?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, especially, like, you know, Newcomb and, Newcomb's been on the radar for a while, 1AOI. Loberg, I won two Toyota Series events last year. River Lee has been on the radar for a while. Like, Martin Villa is, like, kind of sneaky, super, super good, and kind of just popped up, it seems like. Like, there's... And some of that stuff is just stuff that I'm biased toward because these are events that I've covered or something like that. But, like, I think there's a lot of interesting dudes next year.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
But yeah, still, I think if I had to like handicap rookie of the year right now, I kind of feel like, you know, probably I feel like Keith Carson is a pretty good guy to look at, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
Now, I do love our boy Nick Hatfield, though.
Oh yeah, Nick.
But yeah, it's I think going to be a pretty fun year from a field standpoint. Like,
yep, definitely.
It's a good one, which is key.
Should we now move to maybe guys that are not fishing the pro circuit? Because I think you and I each have some takes and also, like, you know, we might shed a tear or two for guys we won't see next year?
Yes. I'll start crying about Bradford Beavers now.
I was just going to say, I'm going to kick it off with shedding some tears for Bradford. Oh, Bradford. Oh,
dude.
I was just texting with him the other day, too, about Ducks. And let me see if I can go back to this text here. I said, man, no pro cert next year? What am I going to do without you? And he said, nope, you'll be fine.
Yeah, he probably would just be like, go watch other guys actually catch fish.
Yeah, yeah. Bradford Beavers has such a way with words. It's pretty remarkable. But yeah, that's, I mean, there's a whole slew. Obviously, you know, we mentioned some newer BPT guys that are fishing the pro circuit this year. Well, you know, we have a handful, like Cody Myers not fishing pro circuit like he did last year. Adrian Avina, Burge, Casey Ashley, the most beautiful smile in fishing.
I know, and Branch, too.
Dude,
the
Branch,
dog.
Big,
I can't
fluffy
believe
golden.
Branch. Yeah, I can't believe he's not going to be at any tournaments next year.
You know, I guess Gagliardi, we talked about him. Dean Rojas, Jason Lambert. Lambert kind of surprised me because I thought with some Tennessee River in there.
They're a little early in the year, though.
Great point. But I still thought, like, well, you know, I could see him wanting to get on some of that action.
There's kind of two categories of guys. Well, let's say three. There's BPT guys who are like, you know what? Two circuits was a lot. I don't want to do that next year.
Yep, yep.
And then there are pro circuit guys who basically haven't, who most of them probably haven't performed up to their expectations.
Sure.
And decided to go other ways.
Sure.
And then there's the final category is guys who are fishing the Elite Series.
Yeah, David Williams. Also someone I would like to shed a tear for. Joseph Webster.
Joseph Webster, yeah. But honestly, losing Webster and Lawyer in the same year is gutting.
That's a, like, yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do without each other. But, you know, what I'm going to do without them is just horrible to think of.
It's not fun. It's not fun.
You know, I'm glad that we got a year of Cody Huff in our lives.
Yes.
I'm glad that
I appreciated,
you know,
it.
We got to see him fish as a pro.
Yep.
It was, I feel like the entire year, like, I feel like it went right, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
I don't feel like it was a missed opportunity. I was pretty sure we weren't going to have him around for very long, and I was not wrong, but I think that it was a good year.
Yes. Yep. We got to see him blossom, and I like that.
Yes. But yeah, no David Williams. Let's see. Josh Douglas gone also,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I mean, Lutzen, not as good as Rue. I'm just going to be honest about that. Still a big loss.
Yep.
But I'm trying to think, is there anyone, the one guy who maybe is a little bit of a mystery and we need to figure this out is Tom Monsoor.
Yeah.
He had a pretty terrible season last year. But at the same time, I kind of never expected Tom Monsoor to stop fishing.
Yeah, I am 100% with you. And like, he's been selling like his lure collection or part of it. And yeah, I should probably call him.
Yeah, we got to figure this out. You know, I'm going to text Bill.
But yeah, no.
Bill will know.
Bill would know. No Monsoor is pretty devastating, I would say, because like you, I just assumed that as long as there were professional fishing tournaments, Tom Monsoor would be there.
Yeah. Although he did say, you know, when he won at the Potomac, which was that he could die happy now.
Right, right.
Or maybe not even die happy, that he just said, I can die now?
I think it was, I can die now. It was more grim.
Yeah, thankfully still alive as far as we know. But yeah, definitely going to be
he's getting back
weird without
catching.
Him and Jigs. Who knows? Maybe he's like, you know what? I just watched this tournament happen, the title. on my home body of water. Like, basically everybody did well fishing this dam. And, like, I'm just so sad I can't do it anymore. Maybe. I don't know.
Hopefully Bill gets back to you. Another guy that's not fishing next year that I think surprised both of us from, again, like a schedule standpoint, was Cody Nichols.
Yeah. Dude, he is good on the Tennessee River. He's a good southern angler in general, for sure.
Yep, yep.
But, like, dude, two spring events on Pickwick and Gunnersville, he would have been a force in at least one of those.
Dude, for real?
Now, that said, he's a guy who, as far as I know, has a real job, or certainly did back when he was fishing. I know he did his rookie year, and didn't really perform up to sure. probably what his standards were. So, I don't know that it's a bad call on his part, but I would have loved to have seen him, especially in those two, to see what would happen. Because it seems like, you know, maybe it's in a Toyota Series event, you know, somewhere down the road. Maybe it would have been at one of those next year. Like, he would break through for a win. I mean, we saw him really get pretty dang close at the championship this year.
Yep, yep.
So, yeah, he's definitely one of those guys who, like, maybe he wasn't going to be a pro who fished for 40 years, but, you know, maybe he was a breakaway. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But yeah, I don't know. I don't really have too much else to say. A lot of the guys who aren't fishing, like, they were not doing super well.
Yeah.
And they might come back and fish again, but it's also not like a tremendous, tremendous surprise, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yeah, I think that, honestly, that probably wraps it up for field list chatter, I would say.
Cool. I think maybe the only other thing to mention is that it's time to sign up for stuff.
Oh, yeah.
By the time you're listening to this, almost all of the BFL divisions will be open for sign-up. All the Toyota Series divisions are open for sign-up. I don't think college and stuff is quite yet, but I need to check on that. But basically, we're in the sweet spot of signing up for stuff. If you want to fish next year, you should hop to it.
And like you said, we're already, like, Toyota Series events are actually filling up pretty quick, given that they haven't been open that long for registering. So, you know, if you got a couple you marked on your calendar you want to get in on, get after it.
Yeah, if you want to fish the Central Division, you should sign up now. Like, you never know, but the Central Division has over 150 pros signed up for all of the events already.
Wow.
Like, and I'm sure we can fish 250, but, you know, I would say go ahead and get on it.
Yes.
There was another one. Oh, also, if you're out west and you're trying to fish at some tournaments, boy, it'd be super cool of you to sign up, just because I'd like to see the numbers be, like, not, you know, two.
Yeah, for real.
But, you know, do your own thing, I guess. And then the Southern Opener on Okeechobee is at 163 pros right now,
ooh,
which is excellent. But also, if you're planning on fishing it, you may want to, you know, make a decision pretty soon.
Yeah.
Just because you never know. From what I understand, the Bass Opens, especially in that Southern Division, are, like, super jammed. So if you're, like, I'm not the be-all, end-all tournament registration for, certainly, but if you're on a waiting list there, you may not get off it, and you may want to fish another tournament.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there.
Yep. Good point.
Kyle, what division are you going to fish next year?
I'm really thinking about, that Central Division seems like a pretty fine one.
I've been thinking about the Western Division myself. I think it could be the easiest route to the Toyota Series.
I was going to say, yeah, from a qualifying standpoint.
I think if I just fish three, I'll make it.
Western is the deal, man.
Yeah. I'll fish three Western events and then Champlain as the wild card.
Yeah, there you go.
Gosh, I do hate that I have to work and watch guys fish at Champlain, because I would love to fish that Champlain event.
Oh, yeah, but, we can fish now.
Well, I don't know if that's... I mean, maybe. I heard that we can. But I also haven't gotten any further communication since then. So, maybe?
Maybe. Well, I don't know.
I don't know, Kyle. You got a BFL division in mind? Hop in the Great Lakes division? Drive north a little?
Just keep bouncing around in the mist. Hey, maybe Mansoor let me borrow his boat, and I can just fish. I can fish the Great Lakes division.
Boy, I wouldn't be letting somebody borrow my boat on the Mississippi River.
Yeah, but Tom Mansoor, I don't think cares enough about it.
Fair.
That it would probably be the best guy to do that from. Or maybe I'll borrow, like, Cade Loffenberg's John boat.
Now you're talking.
Yeah.
That'd be the ticket.
That seems like I could repair most things on that.
It seems like registration is going good again next year. It seems like based on the Bass Opens registration, like, people really super want to fish tournaments. And so as much as they complain about gas prices, it's not slowing anyone down.
Yeah, for sure.
Which, I mean, heck, I've been complaining about gas prices, and it's not slowing me down. I'm still fishing as much as I can. So,
dude, the other day I was driving around scouting for some ducks, and gas around here has been like $3.15 a gallon-ish. And
yeah, it was like $3.29 here.
I went by this. There's a Casey's outside this little town, and the sign that displays the gas price is kind of small. And when I went past it, it said $2.98, and I about locked the brakes up on the truck. I was like, "Surely I need gas." So I went over, filled up, and I was like, "Wow, this feels like I accomplished something." And then I burned a whole bunch more gas and filled up the next morning for whatever price. But it was very fun to see below $3 a gallon for gas.
That's huge.
Yeah, that was a big win.
I remember, I feel like there was a while where gas was like 98 cents a gallon in Kentucky or something like that. And this would have been like a few years ago, right? Like, it was ridiculously cheap.
I guess.
And,
well, yeah.
Maybe it never got that cheap. Maybe it was $1.98 and I'm thinking the wrong way.
Could have been that too.
But I remember I was like, man, I need to get like some drums. I need to store
this. I need to fill up the bed of my truck. Put a tarp in it, pump it full of gas.
You know, that was a really weird little time when I was... Was it when I was driving to... I was driving to somewhere. Was it in the? It was in the spring, so I was driving to Eufaula.
The gas shortage, right?
Right? Yeah, that was so weird.
Yeah.
It, like... I started hearing that there was a gas shortage, like, midway through my drive, while I was, like, in, like... Pennsylvania, and I'm like, what? There's no way there's a gas. This isn't a real thing. Come on. and then the next day, I went to like six gas stations in the morning trying to get gas in like South Carolina before I found one that had gas. I was like, what is going on here?
Well, all right.
I guess it's a real thing. All right. Kyle, I think we're in good shape, right?
I think we are, man. I think we crushed it again this week, and it's time for you to bring us home.
All right. Well, let me tell you, folks. Few lures have stood the test of time like the original Rattle Trap by Bill Lewis. And now, with the help of Major League Fishing pro Mark Daniels Jr., we're launching the SB57 and MR6. Go to rattletrap.com to learn more. Next thing. Are you in need of a great career opportunity that gives you time to fish and spend time with the family? Neat Companies is looking for you. Neat needs Class A CDL drivers now. Competitive pay, 100% paid health insurance, 401k, tuition reimbursement, and more are just some of the benefits. Call Neat now at 833-463-NEAT to get your career started. That's 833-463-NEAT.
Boom.
I love it.
Boom.
I guess that being it, folks, we've got an email address, podcast@majorleaguefishing.com.
Can you still do FLW Kyle? Fishing?
Oh, it still works out there too.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, if you want to be old school. Kyle, you are on Instagram. It's Kyle Lumber. I'm there. It's Jody Blanco. MLF is all sorts of places. I think we're like phasing out the big five thing. It's like just five now. It's a little confusing.
Yeah, you might see a little like name change to not Major League Fishing.
Stay tuned for that, I guess.
But some logos might look different than they did last year.
But I mean, the tournaments are going to be the same, so don't worry about it.
Yeah. Yep. Don't.
But yeah, we got a whole bunch of social media going on. We do have a TikTok. I know that. Also, I set it up so you can listen to the podcast on Facebook now.
Hey.
I don't know. I've never met someone who listens to a podcast on Facebook. But if you do and you want to tell me about it, I'm all ears.
Yeah. Hit us up. Send us an email. Let us know.
Yeah. Yeah, send us an email about a thing that you did on Facebook. Would be excellent. yeah, I guess, Kyle, that pretty much does it.
I think so, man. You know, hopefully you can get out fishing and it's not too December-y. And, you know, hopefully everyone else is going fishing or hunting or doing something fun outside, getting ready for the holiday season. And, yeah, I'm going to go try to find some ducks. So, until next time, see ya.